You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So as far as like writing music and things like that go, I've lifted a lot of things from a lot of different things that I've listened to in my life. I mean, I've been writing songs for like, I don't know, 25 years, and I've been like mostly writing them in MIDI and stuff and all that nonsense. But the idea of having two guitars interplaying with one another, one guitar just kind of hangs on a static note and the other guitar moves around, and you just get this like kind of pedal tone of sound. I think I've used that like 40 times in writing music, and that part that we just faded out in on Fable is exactly that. So it kind of goes to show you that like no matter what you try to do and no matter what music you try to write, the things that you love are always going to come out in it. So that's my intro back to Bar Down Breakdown. Hi, my name is Tom. You probably haven't.
I had no idea where the hell you were going.
All that much.
For the segue.
But I haven't been around for a couple of months, and now I'm back. Hopefully I'll be back for a while. So thanks for listening. All the cool messages and stuff I got. Obviously, just want to take a quick moment to shout out to my co-host here who started up a GoFundMe for my medical expenses, and that was funded in like a week. It's just absolutely unbelievable, the people that reached out and helped out. And I know a lot of listeners of the podcast, as well as a lot of people from, you know, Isles meetups with Mikey and, you know, Justin's friend group that, you know, I just met recently in the past couple of years have poured some stuff in. So that's awesome. I can't thank you guys enough. That's been such a burden off of my back. So and that's all. That's all of the whiny cry that I'm going to do. So thanks for having me back, boys. Episode 204 with Nick Newsham of Gatsby's American Dream, the Money Pit. Now doing tons of features on some really, really cool music. And we're going to get to that and talk about all of that. But episode 4 was the last time that we had Nick on. So 200 episodes ago, that's like, I don't know, 5 or 6 years or something. Who knows how long ago that was, but it was long. But we're super stoked to have you on. Thanks so much, Nick. What's going on, my friend?
Hey, thanks for having me. You know, I'm just new to hearing about your whole story and everything that you've gone through to make it back to this episode. And I don't know, kind of an honor, kind of feels like a special occasion. And thanks for having me.
Yeah, hell yeah, man.
It is a special occasion. Truly, like, you know, Tom is a friend, like a life friend at this point. Like, we're going on over 20 years of friendship. And what has always been a common theme that really has helped keep our friendship alive, there's always been Gatsby's American Dream. Like, that was like the band that Tom and I kind of realized when we were in high school that we mutually loved and like didn't know it. And then like it was the Acceptance, Gatsby's American Dream, and Snaked Across the Crown tour where Tom and I, like, I had an extra ticket and I was like, yo, you want to come to this show? And he came, and like, because he was a fan. And ever since then, like, we've seen you all over the country. Like,
yeah,
you guys were mentioned in his best man speech to me when I got married.
Oh, damn. Nice.
Yeah. So sure. Like, hearing that you guys played, you know, this killer reunion show gave us such FOMO. Like, seeing all the stories of the sold out show was just like, damn, how the hell did we miss that?
Well, I mean, we practiced way too hard for there just to be like one show. So like,
oh, that's
definitely going to have some more. We're just like figuring it out and kind of going at our own pace. So something that we were never really able to do. We're like all grown ups now. And so we can say, hey, like in a couple months we'll play here and a couple months we'll play here. And I'm going to hit the road for over 200 days a year. You know what I mean? So it's like a nicer way to do it.
Yeah, for sure. I just want to, am I sounding okay now?
Yeah.
You're good,
yeah.
Brother.
All right, cool. All right. Yeah. Cause you guys paid your dues, you know, and you guys, you know, talked about it on, you know, that song on the self-titled record where it's just like, you know, getting pumped of honey, you know, essentially, and just like kind of getting all of your love for this business ripped out of you just because you're getting bled dry, you know. And but you guys did it for a long time. I mean, you did DIY tours and toured around in a van, and you know, now you've gotten to the point where you have that luxury of saying, hey, we can play once every, you know, once every couple of months, we can play this festival, we can jump on this, we can do that. And you know, being that you are, well,
no,
you
know, I gotta say, like, we didn't really know that if we would have that luxury until we played this one show, because like we had no idea how it was going to sell. We didn't know the size venue to play. We literally had no idea, but like things went well. So now we can say like, yeah, you know, we can play some more, but like there's a very good possibility that it was not going to go that great. I mean, okay, you sell tickets, but then the show sucks, or like you play really mm-hmm. well, but nobody comes. I mean,
yeah,
there's different scenarios.
So can I dive into some of the logistics just like about that reunion show?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because 200 episodes ago, you said there was a slim to no chance that you guys would do a reunion show because like of where your lives are at, and like, you know, Rudy working for Amazon and Bobby working for the airlines and things like that. So like, when did things kind of start falling in place? Like, did a booking agent or someone reach out to you? And like,
no, like basically, so I've always been down. I'm always like, I mean, I think I've actually written about that in lyrics. Like, I'm ready. I'm ready to fucking go. Let's go. I can swear. Are we good?
Yeah, you can swear.
Yeah, cool. Okay. So anyways, I went to see Rudy play drums because Rudy was playing for some local band. And I'm like, anytime Rudy would play, I would go to watch him play because that dude is a god.
Oh yeah.
So, and I wasn't the only one feeling that way. And I was at the show and I looked over to my left and I saw Kirk, our bass player, Gatsby, for those who don't know. And I hadn't seen him in years. But I had seen him. I went and saw his local band a couple times. So I haven't been like actively trying to get the band back, but I'd been like injecting myself into scenarios in which maybe a couple beers will be had and we'll have a conversation. And mm-hmm. So all of a sudden the three of us are at Rudy's show and it was just like, yo, should we do this again? It's like, I'm down. So there's three people right there, you know, we don't got much further to go. And then that's kind of when the talk started to happen. And that was probably 6 months ago or something, a year ago.
But like being kind of removed from the game a little while, like, did you guys even know like how to approach like the venues that are around and still like venues that are still around from your touring days? And like, you know, you guys did the show in LA, which is not your hometown market. So like, how did that come about?
That is a wonderful question. That, it seems, was decided without any conversation. I believe we had to start a group thread, right? So that was like step one, and to get anything done, we have to be able to communicate with each other. And then somewhere in that, I believe it was like Kirk was like, I talked to Dave, we're down, we're going to play LA in May. And I was like, or in April, sorry. And I was like, oh, would have loved to talk about that a little bit. But I'm like, all right, I guess we got a date and we got to hit it. So then it was just on from there. And I mean, in hindsight, I wouldn't have had it any other way. But it was like, this is happening. And it's fun because like next we still get to hit Seattle. Like we still get to hit other markets and stuff. LA was a very good like litmus. And so, and like it went way better than any of us could have thought. So the whole thing's encouraging. Yeah.
Now seeing pitchers, like it seemed like one of the bigger rooms that you guys have headlined. Like even when you guys were at kind of your peak, it seemed like there were thousands of people there, which is kind of like,
looks can be deceiving. And I mean, I'm not going to like tell you how small that room was, but it was not thousands of people, but it was a super nice theater. The Terragram is dope. and yeah, we sold it out. So that was like, we did not expect that at all.
And like the other thing too is nostalgia really gets the best of people. You know, a lot of bands, you know, at the, you know, quote unquote peak of their careers, you know, like you look at a band like American Football, like I use this example all the time. Like they, you know, when they were actually writing and curating music, you know, during their most quote unquote influential time, you know, they were playing in rooms of 50, 60 people. You know, they decide they're going to come back and, you know, now they're selling out Webster Hall. It's just because the time elapses and people get re-enamored with this music. And now it's multiple generations. Now it's, you know, the one generation who remembers it from the mid 90s and the next generation of, you know, kids from the 2010s that realize how influential American Football was for you know, Jimmy Eat World or Taking Back Sunday. And, right. And it just keeps moving along. So you guys are kind of like smack dab in that lineage of where, you know, it was the mid 2000s. This kind of music was just branching off and developing, and it was getting really popular. So, you know, you had, you know, bands like Paramore, you know, who, you know, were just a Fueled by Ramen band that all of a sudden now is, you know, playing arenas and, you know, 21 Pilots and like all of these bands that were, you know, instrumental towards that group of time and moved forward. So I think that's kind of a lot of what you get, you know, is like people that remember Gatsby for what it was and all of the bands that came forward that kind of used Gatsby's formula. And, you know, now you have a bunch of new fans. And I think that's a great thing.
It is. It was cool. Like to see like some kids who are 17 get on stage to crowd surf and to know every word. And it's like, how'd this happen? Like, I'm like, there's a lot to, I didn't know what to expect, man. We haven't played a Gatsby show in like 15 years. So all of it. There's like a new thing people are doing now where they can make their phone like have a scroll message across it to like get your attention. Yeah. So people were like requesting songs that way. So it'd be like Dragon of Pendor. And it was like going across and like, that's new. I did not remember that shit. Like,
but I think you guys got to give yourselves credit though, too, because like you said, you haven't played a show in 15 years. And I think Terragram can fit standing room like 625. Like,
yeah,
that's like buns to wieners, 625.
It was, yeah.
So, I mean, getting 600 people out in Los Angeles to a show where a band hasn't played in 15 years, like, that is amazing. Or released any music since 2006, I think.
So then, like, okay, so the show starts, and I do, like, the intro of Volcano. How could you understand the way I feel? So I do that off stage because I wanted to do, like, a theatrical, like, I come out when the guitars hit and the lights come on. It's a whole thing. Well, I'm off stage singing that intro, and I hear everybody singing it, like, so much louder than I could have anticipated. I was like, oh, it's going to be like that tonight. I mean, I had no idea what to expect, dude. It's like one of our craziest crowds. Like the enthusiasm was out of control. It was like emotional kind of like,
yeah.
And like, I'm still getting my head around it really, but I guess it kind of feels like we never really got money or fame for doing anything, but I know that we like, I mean, I sweated and put like, I had 8 million conversations at the merch table every night for like 8 years. Like that shit doesn't mean nothing. It doesn't go away. Like we put out all these records and it meant something to people. And it was just like this big, like mirror of like gratitude and like, just like, it wasn't for nothing. Like this shit meant something. Cause like I was there, it meant something to me, but like, so was everybody else, dude. So
yeah,
just love. And like, just, it just feels good, man.
And it's awesome because, a band that was kind of grinding it out at like the same time that you guys were, and I'm sure you're familiar with them, The Sleeping out of Long Island. Yeah. You know, they had a similar path where like, they had a predator like label that didn't really like take care of them. And like they were on Victory. So, you know, about Victory and like they made no money and grinded just as hard as you guys.
Yeah.
And then they just had their reunion show a couple of months ago at this point. And it was like the most gratifying thing for them because it sold out in minutes, the show. And like now they're putting out some new music and it just like sparked the fire again.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. I can relate. That's fucking cool, man. But hey, like it doesn't go that good for everybody, you know? No. Like, I mean, sorry, like not to be morose, but like I just read about this like Skylet Drive guy.
Who just
passed. Now, I'd never even really heard of them, but like I Wikipedia deep dived, and like for every like warm and fuzzy story like this, there's also some other shit. So I don't know. I guess that just adds to like the gratitude and feeling grateful for the situation because it's been this long and we're healthy and we're still able to do things like sing and play guitar and shit. Like, I mean, it's just, I don't know, man. It's a beautiful thing for real.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. So, you know, I'm sure you were familiar with the When We Were Young festival and like some of those that have been kind of nostalgia festivals that are popping up. Like, are you ready to throw the Gatsby name in there and be like, yo, we're ready. We played our show. Like, we want in next time.
You know, probably by like a festival basis. We did have like, I think we had a couple offers this year, but we just wanted to play a club first. And like, I've always enjoyed playing a club better. It's just better everything, really. Yeah. Sound, literally everything. however, Saves the Day is playing We Were Young this year, and they're going to play Can't Slow Down and In Reverie, like the two my two favorite albums. So I might have to go just for that, performing or not.
Yeah, that's man. That's what a thing. I mean, I wish I could be there for it. You know, Saves the Day is, you know, one of the most important bands to me.
Me too, man. Yeah.
Just listening to that and coming up and, you know, In Reverie just got repressed on vinyl through a small label, which is, you know, what I have wanted to talk to, you know, you about being that, you know, there's a good chunk of your discography that isn't available on record. So, you know, given the success of the last show, is that something you guys have toyed around with, you know, possibly trying to get Volcano or the self-titled out?
We have tried and we just don't really get any emails back or anything. Now that could be because our last album was a big fuck you to the record label. So like that could be a coincidence or, on the other hand, like they've been like sold to like a hedge fund essentially. And it's like it's a legacy media group who owns a collection of not only Fearless's records, but like a bunch of other stuff. And they just kind of, I don't know, in my opinion, I think they just kind of throw it in a vault and like, it's not like it's a big earner or even, so no, we can't. We don't have access to that. I would love maybe with doing stuff again, there might be an avenue. If anybody's out there listening that has any help in this area, I'm all ears.
So I'm ready to give you an idea.
Re-record it like Taylor.
I was just
re-record it like Taylor Swift.
Yeah. You got Casey Bates in the back pocket, like, yo, Casey, re-record this, let's go.
And that's not an anomaly in like the alternative industry. Thrice just did it.
Yeah, yeah. And it was people loved it.
Yeah, with the artist in the ambulance.
I almost really, really think cool. that it sounds better now with like dozens of vocals.
It sounds better now, and then the features that they put on it. I mean, they had, you know, the dude from Architects on it, the dude from Curl Up and Die on it. You know, it's
So they pumped features into the original.
Yeah.
Now, did they write new parts or did they sing existing parts?
No, it was pretty much the entire record verbatim. The only thing I did notice, though, and just because I'm a music nerd, is I never thought the lead in what the hell's the name of that song? Can't think of the name of it. It's like the fourth track. It's called Silhouette. That's the one. And I never thought the lead on it sounded right in the original recording. And then when I heard it re-recorded, it sounded like it made sense finally. So I was like, oh, maybe they actually like, you know, fucking got weird and then changed it. But
I think somebody agreed with you this whole time, probably.
Yeah. Tepe probably just changed it up a little bit.
Yeah. But 4 Year Strong did it too. I mean, you know, they re-recorded Enemy of the World. And, you know, I like that concept. Like, I wish more bands would do that. And the reason I wish more bands would do that is because let's use Gatsby as an example, right? So Volcano came out in what, 2005?
That's right.
So, okay. So let's say 2025, 20-year anniversary, right? So imagine if the whole band goes into the studio, 20 years matured, matured musically, matured sonically from where you guys were when you wrote that record. Like, I would love to hear your spin on it today. And not necessarily that I'd want it to be different. Like, I'd kind of want it to be close to the source material, but obviously you're not going to sing the same way that you sung on the record. Right. And, you know, the other thing that's true is you write a record, you put out a record, and then you spend years performing it on the road. And I feel like you find ways to get more comfortable vocally, change things out that sonically make sense to you. So, like, for instance, you know, you could sing a chorus a completely different way that you feel fits better than what's on record.
Yeah.
You put it out on this re-record and it's like, oh my God, I get to hear this reinterpretation. And I think that's such a sweet thing. So if I ever become like a multi-billionaire, like somehow, if like, you know, of sacks of money just fall on top of my head, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just be like, hey, I'll pay you a stupid amount of money to just do what I want you to do for me. And then if it sells, it sells. And if it doesn't, I have multi-billions of dollars. So it doesn't really matter.
You're totally right about that, though. Like, songs that you record them, and then honestly, you're way better at singing them and shit, like a couple months after you record them. Yep. And then there's stuff that comes up. You go, oh, I should have sang it like that. But now it's what everyone knows as the song. But so that happens constantly.
Yeah. And I mean, you did get a chance on, you know, with the Badlands. I mean, like, you put it out on the EP and then it kind of got reworked for the full length a little bit, you know, so you kind of have that opportunity. And I love that. Like, I love when, you know, bands have a, like a primordial version of a song and then like a more developed version of it. And the especially cool thing is when you get to see, you know, bands play live and they're playing new music before it comes out on record. I have this story that I'll never forget. I was at the Downtown Long Island where you guys have played countless times. I can't tell you how many times you've played there, but you've played a lot. And Coheed and Cambria was playing. And this was in between the release of the second stage Turbine Blade and In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3. And they played the opening track to In Keeping Secrets. And it was like the early version of it. And it was like so much different than what it ended up being on record. Like, it was like way shorter and, you know, didn't have a lot of the theatrics that they put in. And it's just kind of cool to see bands you really like and how the stuff develops over time. So, but, you know, whatever we can do to get more music on record so I can buy it is just,
I gotta say, the Why We Fight and Ribbons and Sugar vinyl look amazing.
Yeah, they do. I have Ribbons and Sugar, and they did a great job with the collection. Did a really good job with that. It's tough. I mean, you know, I'm repping my homie Near Mint, who is a big proponent of you guys, and he's told me he's reached out to you guys to try to see what was up in the past. But, you know, they have been doing some records from that 2000s era.
I just got my that Forgive Dirt and Rozzy's Shadow. I just got that to you, man.
Yep, and definitely great that you brought that up, because I have that record sitting right next to me.
Me too. Yeah, it's like right across the room.
And you know, that is something that I think is still to this day way ahead of its time. I you know, that whole theatric production put into the like the realm of alternative music, it just like, I feel like it's something that like, you know, don't roast me for saying it, but it's like, you know, Pinball Wizard by The Who, you know, is like your quintessential, like, you know, kind of rock opera. And here's an emo opera happening. And, you know, I mean, you've got you featured on it. You've got Aaron from Me Without You. You've got, I Max. Mean, like, yeah, you got Max. You got Chris from Saves the Day. You've got
John Gourley from Portugal.
John Gourley from Portugal, who there, forget it. That was actually one of the things I wanted to, it was like the first thing I was going to bring up when we did 2000s emo roulette that you heard about off camera.
Yeah, but
it's coming. I'm doing a roulette and
I won't step on it.
Talk about, he's going to have to talk about a bunch of bands. So I'm stoked for it, but yeah, what a cool presentation. You know, Corey from Near Mint did such a great job on it. You know, I have had conversations with him about, you know, Volcano and the self-titled record. And he's like, dude, if I could get my hands on it, he was like, it's going down. He was like, but, you know, he kind of echoed the same sentiment where, you know, it got sold off and it's just sitting around. And, you know, these companies don't license. They just don't like
it. Hoard.
Yeah, they
you would think that they would want to license it out, because that would be a more of a return on their overall investment since they purchased it, rather than the, what, 8% of a penny that they get from streams?
Well, according to them, I think we're still recouping for our music video. We never saw, I mean, yeah, anyways, yeah. It's just, that's always it. Oh, yeah, a couple more records, and then you'll break even, and then you'll start getting royalties. It's like, or whatever they said when we were kids. Hard to remember. Yeah.
The same old song and dance.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you know, we did talk about how the success of the reunion show has kind of lit the fire for you guys to maybe play like one-off dates here and there. What about like getting into the studio and like, me, you know, I know that like that Modern Man like EP kind of came out, but there's like a few other tracks that are kind of are sitting around, haven't really surfaced yet. And then like maybe having that come out as like a full length, like adding a few more tracks to that and getting some more music out.
I mean, that's one way to do it. Like there's a million different ways to approach that. Yeah. Like I think I have like two, you know, there's random B-sides and Gatsby's stuff out there, but I don't know if it's necessarily like something we feel comfortable releasing, just because I don't know. I feel like our bar has always been pretty high of like, if we release it, it's like, it's some real shit that we're proud of. So we don't want to tarnish any, I don't know, like our track record and is pretty high. So I don't know. We'll see. I just like to, we've talked about writing new music. We just wanted to get the show under our belt first. But I'm always elbowing Ryan. Hey, Ryan, I know you got some riffs, dude. Send me some riffs and let me write some shit. But, you know, that being said, like playing live, Bob isn't part of the live thing. But like, who's to say if he wants to be part of the writing the new stuff? So there's like more than a million different conversations that need to have before we start discussing like music, like new music. But I'm itching to be creative for sure. And I know I'm not the only one. So it doesn't seem like too far-fetched.
I love it. And you mentioned Bobby, and I noticed from like the promo pictures, he wasn't in them. But Ryan came back. Like I know Ryan was kind of like an original member and then kind of took a couple of years off and then came back at the very end. I can't remember the lineage of how that went, but it was cool to see that he was back in the picture. And I was like, oh, I wonder if Kyle's gonna come in and play like keys on, you know, this live show.
Yeah. But, so, well, yeah, Ryan. I mean, Ryan had to hold down like basically two guitar parts and learn them all into one, and it's hilarious. People were people accused us of piping in Bobby's guitar into the show, and Ryan's going, I worked too damn hard to have people thinking that my guitar
backtracks. Yeah.
Oh, it's pretty good, dude. I love it. Yeah.
Awesome. So before we get into a little bit of Kraken talk, because, you know, we get the opportunity to talk about how cool their season's going.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't it nice that we have a Seattle fan on the podcast?
We sure do. That is dope, man. And I love it. And, you know, the other thing I love is, you know, getting really, really good fidelity sound, you know, out of a great set of earbuds. I'm a big proponent of using over the head headphones, but, you know, when I'm not able to, you know, be at home, you know, I don't like to take my over the head headphones out, you know, so I use earbuds. And, you know, with coffee starting at like $5 without any customizations, and our bank accounts are always somehow depleting, we're officially entering a dupe session, right? So most products do the same thing, but are priced differently solely based on the brand name, you know, your Sony, Apple, and all that crazy stuff. So a good duplicate or a dupe is crucial for getting the highest quality at the best price. One dupe you definitely should not sleep on are the Raycon wireless earbuds. It's premium audio at the perfect price point, so you can listen to what you want when you want without breaking the bank. So, you know, if you're like me and you want to have a second pair of headphones just to take out in the wild when you're, I don't know, taking the train, when you're just, you know, doing yard work or whatever, that's what Raycon's good for. And their mission is to prove that you shouldn't have to pay an arm and a leg for quality sound and essential smart tech listening features. So you can get a pair and a spare and still pay less than you would for some of those other companies, you know, and in this economy, every purchase needs to be exact. So they offer buy now, pay later options. You can pay as low as $18 at checkout, which is really cool. They offer 2 years of product protection insurance for just a few bucks, free domestic shipping, and flat fee international shipping. They have over 50,000 five-star reviews, 50,000. That's crazy. And they've got a ton of great features. They've got noise isolation, so you're not going to hear what's happening outside and you're just going to get the full sound inside. They have crystal clear call quality if you're, you know, like me and you used to be on the phones for like, you know, half of your fucking life. You could just totally get some great, you know, quality out of that. And then you get 8 hours of playtime, which is like, you know, in their everyday mode, which is awesome. 8 hours of playtime. So you could listen to the Gatsby record, like, I don't know, 53 times or something. So you could do that. So you can go by Raycon.com/THPN today and you get 15% off your Raycon order. That's buyraycon.com/THPN. And that's going to score that 15% off. Again, that's buyraycon.com/THPN for the Hockey Podcast Network. Love a good set of earbuds, you know? Love a good set of earbuds. But let's talk some Seattle Kraken hockey, man. Dude, way to knock off the defending champs. What a hell of a story. I mean, you know, the Golden Knights had a hell of a story when they expanded into the league. And now the Kraken have this story as they've expanded into the league. I see a lot of similarities between those teams. They're able to put together a pretty good core. As an Islander fan, you know, I was all too happy to get rid of Jordan Eberle and that contract. And of course he's over there lighting it up,
you know, scoring overtime winners.
Yep. One of the best players on the team. Crazy to think. So, I guess the first question I have for you is, have you been following the playoffs? Have you been, you know, kind of watching them get out there? What are you thinking? What are you seeing?
Yeah. So, I mean, second year team. So like, yeah, I'm a new fan to hockey, but I'm on the ground level of this thing. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been like, I probably went to like 6 or 7 games this year, all with my same buddy. Yeah. And, I got like the tentacle arm sock thing that you put up in the air. Oh,
that's so cool.
Like the Climate Pledge Arena and the whole production is just like out of this world cool and fun. And so about the playoffs. So we were play a show with Memory Drip, who's members of Fear Before the March of Flames. Singer is Dave, who's a diehard Avalanche fan. And it was the, and they're like, we're literally doing sound check. And I'm like, it was game five. It was game six that night of the show, I believe. And I elbowed him and I'm like, hey, man, go Kraken. And he's like, ah. And so he was telling me how the Avalanche had like more players missed games than like any team ever due to injury, due to whatever.
Yeah.
Then that motherfucker comes to Seattle and the Four Seasons hooker gets him. Do you know about this?
No.
One of the best players for the Avalanche didn't play because there was a Russian hooker at the Four Seasons Hotel in downtown Seattle and the cops got called and she was bloodied up and he was all covered in blood.
Oh, Valerie Niskushin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And so then they're already dealing with injuries and then that guy couldn't hang with freaking Seattle prostitutes apparently. So I think we got him there. I think it was probably an inside job. But anyways, and then he didn't get arrested or nothing. He just took some time off for some personal reasons.
Yeah.
Amazing. They just
extradited him back to Russia, wherever the fuck he's from, man.
You got a lot more hookers.
That was the shadiest thing.
Yeah.
And I remember when it broke, when the news broke, before like the actual story broke,
They
were just like, oh, Niskushin's gone. We don't know how long he's gone for, and we don't know why he's gone, but he's gone. And it's like, what the fuck? Like, I'm thinking here, like, he got, like, extradited back to his home country because he's, like, a spy or something, or, like, his entire family got massacred. But here he is just, like, beating up a hooker. Like, What is going on? And what's going – just, like, what's going on in general with hockey players, man? Stop beating up hookers. Just chill out.
Is that a thing? Well, is that, like, a
– doing hello and beating up hookers. Those are the two things.
Just, you know.
It's they go hand in hand. Just don't –
It's the Stanley Cup, dude. Once you win that thing, you just lose your fucking mind.
It's like a 1980s Skid Row band.
I love it, man.
So then, and then on to like last night's game, which was incredible. I don't know when this podcast comes out, but last night we won game one against whoever we were playing. I'm still figuring it out. The Dallas Stars. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
the worst.
In fact, when I was talking. When I was talking to Dave, I'm like a new hockey fan, kind of elbows me and he goes, so you're still like trying to kind of figure out what icing is and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to say, but yes, I am. Although I'll tell you what I love, offsides, because the Kraken would not have won if that goal was not called offsides by the Avalanche. So that was pretty lit.
Yeah. Learning hockey is a cool thing, man. It really is. Like my wife, you know, I've gotten her to watch a couple of hockey games. You know, we went to we have an ECHL team in Orlando called the Solar Bears. And, you know, like we took her to to a game for my birthday and it was just like she got really super into it. So, you know, I had her watching a couple of Islanders games. But, you know, every time the whistle would blow, she would, you know, be like, you know, what is this? What is that? What is this? And I mean, it's not the easiest game to pick up, but. You know, there are a lot of similarities to, you know, soccer, you know, in the game. So, you know, if you're a soccer fan, you tend to pick it up a little bit quicker, you know, because the whole idea of being offsides and all that kind of stuff are very similar. But, there's, you know, a ton to learn about it and the nuances of it. But once you do, you really start to enjoy watching it.
So last night I do a like bar trivia and then like a block away and the score was like 2-1 and then I got to the bar like a block away and it was 4-3 or it was like we scored more goals in a shorter amount of time than anybody ever in playoffs history, I believe, yesterday. Then I started a Let's Go Kraken chant at the bar after we won in overtime. And then tell me this. Is this a hockey thing? When something good is going on, do you like wrap your knuckles on a table or something? Like instead of clapping, do people do like a rap on the table thing, or is that
might be a Seattle thing?
I get what you're saying. I don't know. I mean, like everybody kind of cheers differently, but like, you know, it could be like a Kraken thing. You know, like the rumbling of the fucking Kraken under the water, maybe.
Or it could be like a pirate thing because pirates used to do that too. Like just like wrap their knuckles on a table and bang.
I think it's pretty Scandinavian too. Like maybe there's something like that. Okay. Oh, all right. Norwegians, I'm still figuring stuff out. But, dude, I'm in no hurry to, like, know everything. I'm going to organically just, like, learn the sport and enjoy it. It's a blast.
It was like the first time I ever watched Beer Fest and I saw all of these different drinking games that I'd never played in my life. You know, like when they were doing a
disc on the floor.
Yeah, when they were doing this thing, you know, like the thing. I never knew what that was until I watched that movie. And then I was like, oh, this is an awesome drinking game. And then you play.
So I guess, you know, since you've been going to games and taking in the in-game experience, you know, with Seattle being like one of the heartbeats of, you know, alternative music and grunge music, do they mix some of that in, like, between stoppage and have like some pretty sweet music playing throughout the game?
Dude, okay. Every single time the Kraken score a goal, it goes dan 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 dan, and everybody goes stops and goes, "Let's go Kraken." Kurt Cobain is rolling in his grave, dude. Like the first couple times I was there, I was like, "No shit, this is what they're doing. They're doing like a Nirvana intro, just followed by 'Let's Go Kraken.'" And all the tech geeks who aren't from here, like, "Yeah, I'm at a Seattle hockey game, Nirvana, you know." And then all grizzled locals like me are just going like, "This is bastardizing everything." And then you go to a couple more games, and then you say, "I'll grab another beer, give me a popcorn, and dan dan, let's go Kraken skin, dude. Just in. I don't give a fuck."
And awesome. I think when they first started, they played like Lithium by Nirvana too. So like they're just like going all in on kind of like just Nirvana instead of like all the other like really good.
Something really cool that they did was they took the college radio KEXP. It's like a pretty famous indie rock radio thing.
Yeah.
And they moved the headquarters like onto Climate Pledge Arena. So like
nice.
They run all the music. Like my buddy's local band that doesn't even draw that much was the house band at the Kraken game the other day.
Awesome.
And it's like up above in the third story, and there's just a band set up there, and it's like a band that you'll go see for $10 at the local bar. And it's like, they do cool stuff like that. It's super neat.
I love that. That's what this podcast is all about.
Got to embrace it, man. You got to embrace it for sure. Just like, you know, the funny thing about that is like, it's true. Like with what Kurt Cobain was about and how much he hated commercialism, he would literally be just like hating this right now. But, you know, I think that a lot of sports is kind of like picky that way, you know, like, or I shouldn't say picky. I should say like more like kind of takes the stereotypes of a city, you know. It's like, I feel like, for me, when you look at gritty and you think about the city of Philadelphia, like they are one and the same, like disheveled, insane, like just fucking nuts. And like, that's your typical Philly sports fan. And it's
the
just
fanatic.
Like,
the fanatic is the same way.
Yeah, the fanatic, you know, where he fucking, you know, beats up Charlie, you know, you know, it's just, it's bad. It's bad for business. But I guess, you know, if that's what they think they're going to do, they're like, "We're just going to embrace the fact that Nirvana was here," and like, not even Pearl Jam or Soundgarden or none of them,
or
just
Foo
Nirvana.
Fighters. Or, I mean, Foo Fighters is technically DC, but still.
But I mean, like, so much, you know, came out of there. But I love it. At least, you know, it gives people something to clap about, and it's better than the Storm Surge. So
well, and that's what the Supersonics were doing. It was just, this is where Boeing is, so we're the Supersonics. It's the same shit. We just got to be known for music and other stuff along the way. So,
Now we mentioned it, you know, 200 episodes ago that you're a huge basketball fan as well. And you were like heartbroken when the Sonics left. You know, has there been rumblings like since, you know, the arena's there and it's very popular right now, like bringing an NBA team back, or are there any rumors and things like that floating around?
Yeah, that's supposed to happen, but it's like been supposed to happen forever. But then like my favorite podcaster, Bill Simmons, he said like on good authority, he has it that like NBA is definitely expanding, getting two more teams, or they're going to make one team. So it's basically going to be Vegas and Seattle.
Yeah.
And that's like supposed to be a done deal, but we don't know any details. We have no idea who's like in ownership, or there's been literally no details. So it's just speculation, but people who know seem to say that it's definitely happening.
And I feel like that can go quick. Like you have the arena in Vegas, you have the arena in Seattle. Like that's probably the hardest part.
I don't know that. I don't know about the NBA and climate pledge. That's, I think it's a big sticking point in Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I know like especially with like the Dallas Stars, because the Stars and the Mavericks play in the same stadium. Like they have a way where they can melt, like get the ice down and put the court on within like an hour.
A lot of teams share.
Yeah. Right. And then Climate Pledge here, Climate Pledge Arena is a, it's also like the biggest venue in downtown Seattle. And so this past summer, I went and saw the Killers.
Oh, nice.
Which was fun, right? But it's like in the 90s in the summer outside, everyone's dressed in shorts. And then you realize you go in there and like there's a platform over ice and the whole place is blowing cold air to like accommodate that ice. So like, don't dress for the summer when you go to a concert there in the summer. It's fucking cold, man.
At least your beard doesn't get warm.
That's right. Absolutely.
Love that. So, are you familiar with Piper Shaw, who is like the TV host for the Kraken?
Oh, she's beautiful.
Yeah, she's also like a huge pop punk and emo fan, and like. Oh. It's cool to see what some teams do to kind of mix in the alternative world. Like our buddy Kyle with the Dallas Stars does it all the time. And for example, and you guys went on tour with them. Kyle's the one that's kind of made Bryce Avery like the music celebrity for the Dallas Stars. So like
he is.
Yeah.
Like what?
They've been playing like Rocket Summer songs in the arena, and Bryce like literally posted a picture yesterday of him like in the suite at a Dallas game, like rocking a Bryce Avery Dallas Stars jersey.
Was that, I was, you know, that Future has a new single called Puffin' on Zooties. And in that single, he says, "My bitch is from Dallas. My bitch is a star." And I wonder if that's a Stars reference. It's gotta be, right?
It's either gotta be a Stars reference or like a Cowboys reference for like the cheerleaders.
Right. Right. But anyways, that's kind of cool. Future strouting out Dallas Stars.
Well, I don't know. And hip hop has always had this weird love relation, like love hate relationship with hockey too. Like especially like with West Coast hip hop, you would see like in the early 90s, all the hip hop artists would wear that, the Kings gear, dude. Yeah. Wore the Kings gear.
Yeah.
That was, and even nowadays, like you still see like sometimes you'll see like Flyers jerseys, you'll see some Penguin jerseys, Rangers jerseys for sure. It just all depends on kind of like who's going on and where. I would have loved to see some like Outkast and like some Thrashers jerseys back in the day. That would have been sick.
Well, our bass player is wearing a Boston jersey in some of like the promo pictures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of funny. I was like, Kirk, where'd you get that jersey? And he found it at a thrift store. And I'm like, those are expensive. Yeah. And it's signed, which is random. What? Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's so weird.
Probably,
man, just like how about Boston falling apart?
Ooh, well,
I think everyone loves to see that, and eventually everyone would love to see like Toronto fall apart.
Yeah,
and seeing the Rangers fall apart was awesome, and I'm like not even just saying that because I'm an Islander fan, but seeing what they did at the trade deadline and having like literally just like an all-star team, and they still couldn't make it past the first round, which just like when you think about the NBA, when you know, when all of those like superstars all
like
went
the Heat or
when they all went on the same team, like they always win. Like in hockey, that just doesn't work. Which is just what makes the playoffs so special for hockey.
Yeah.
Well, except for this year when you've got like, you know, the Lakers barely making it into the playoffs. You know, they had to survive almost, you know, getting to the play-in round, and you know they've got LeBron James,
hey,
you know, arguably the best player in basketball, and Anthony Davis, one of the best players in basketball. And I mean, you know, they lost 35, 36 games. You know, they weren't a good team.
Can't play together.
So yeah, it's you know, sometimes when you make a super team, you know, everybody can love one another, but if they don't gel, you know.
I love my favorite. I mean, if we're just going to talk NBA for 2 seconds, I love the Heat story this year. I mean, you got the 8-seed Heat who lost the first play-in game, squeak in the second game, beat the number one Bucks. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Butler going off for 55 one night, 44 the next night. Conspiracy theory that he's Michael Jordan's son. You heard that one?
There's been some weird conspiracy theories I heard, but not that one.
It's real, dude. Look it up. I mean, it's for real. It's pretty funny. Yeah.
It's just crazy to see. Like it was funny because we were up in the Carolinas ripping a few gigs this past weekend, and we were listening to Bill Burr on the way up, and Bill Burr's podcast, he was talking about playoff hockey, and he was like, look, man, everybody was talking about, like, well, this is before the Bruins lost, but he was like, everyone's talking about, oh, the President's Trophy curse, blah, 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 blah. He's like, in playoff hockey, you are 0-0. What you did in the regular season does not matter. It is all, like, everyone has a clean slate, and everyone's going, and he's like, you never know what will happen in playoff hockey. And same thing with basketball, too. Basketball is very similar, where you can have an eighth seed team come up out of nowhere and take the Stanley Cup. We saw it with the Bruins in 2011. You know, they were wild card. No one ever thought that they would have come, and they literally burned down the city of Vancouver. So,
yo, I was in Vancouver for the Olympics when it was the USA against Canada for the gold medal game, and that was a party. I mean, mm-hmm. Vancouver exploded. I've never seen anything like it. People told us not to tell anybody we were Americans in the event that we lost. It was a whole thing. And so we drew little curlicue mustaches on our face with a Sharpie, and we wore the Canadian flag like a cape. Yeah. Around. And then we're like, yeah, we're Canadian.
it's funny. Like I remember when the Bruins won. I remember when the Rangers won when I was a kid in
94.
Vancouver literally burnt to flames the first time. But I remember vividly because I was way older. I was in my 20s when the Bruins won. And I remember watching all the highlights. And I think one of my favorite highlights, and I'll always say it on this show, the dude got hit right in the Charlie Browns with a flashbang. And the flashbang bounced off and then just ignited like maybe a half a foot away, right in front of him. And they have it on the internet in slow-mo, and I will watch that every time the Canucks lose.
I went into the Kraken game when they played the Islanders here in Seattle. You guys do not travel well. There were not very many Islanders fans at that game.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it was just because – was that January or December? It was like
– early season.
It was like after the holidays. I feel like if it was a, you know, early fall, like, weekend game, you would see more Islander fans there because – one of our superstars actually played minor league hockey for Seattle. So, like,
I think you mentioned this last time we did this. Yeah.
So there's like secretly a small little pocket of Islander fans just because, like, they didn't like grow up on Long Island or anything. Like, they became fans because they followed him when he made it to the Islanders. That's so cool. There's definitely some Islander fans out that way.
Well, I guess like the next game I went to was the Bruins early in the season.
Yeah.
And man, I mean, well, so a thing about Seattle, like Mariners games, there's always just as many or more Red Sox fans for some reason. Hmm. And so I'm like, is this going to translate to hockey? And like, it did, dude.
Yeah.
There's so many freaking fans.
They're all bandwagon fans too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But speaking of bandwagon fans and playoff hockey, good time to talk about DraftKings really quick. One of our other sponsors.
So light the lamp during the hockey playoffs or DraftKings Sportsbook. Right now, new customers can make a $5 bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly. So download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and sign up with promo code THPN. New customers can make a $5 hockey playoff bet and score $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In Massachusetts, call 800-327-5050 or visit gamblinghelpline.com. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Kansas, call 1-800-522-4700. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 and older in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. All right, so Nick.
Mikey, I'm so glad you took that because I would have read it as Hopeney. I would have 100% said 877-8-HOPENY or text HOPENY, not even thinking it was Hope, New York.
Yep, Hope NY. But Nick, you know, this has been like so full circle having, you know, talked with you before you guys got the team, and like you were kind of on the fence back in the day, like were you going to get into hockey or not? And it's cool to see that you're falling in love with it. And to bring it even more full circle, we talked before we started recording, you know, Gatsby's American Dream was actually on an NHL soundtrack for EA Sports. And now, you know, when you were talking about how you had some younger kids at your reunion show, I'm starting to think, I was like, man, what happens if there was like, you know, a 7 or 8 year old that was playing that game at the time and, you know, obviously wasn't going to shows or anything like that, but played the game so much that they, all these years later, like continued to be Gatsby's American Dream fans, like when you weren't even a band or doing anything. And then this moment happens and like, oh my God, like this is the band that I discovered as a kid playing NHL 07 or 08, whatever it was. Like there's definitely a possibility of that.
Totally. I mean, so, okay. So I work as an electrical contractor in Seattle. And, one time I'm doing this job for this guy, and he's a Canadian, builder. And, we're just kind of working the job. You talk to people and talking about, oh, he's got his funky Canadian accent. I won't attempt it. But he was basically telling me that like him and his buddies, all they would do is like sit around, drink beers and play NHL hockey. And so I'm like, and I'm like thinking like, yeah, how many years you been doing that? And then he like told me like the year that he was like, yeah, like, oh, we're in there. I'm like, have you ever heard this song before? And he's like, it's like, oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I love this song. Like, that's my band. He like lost his shit, bro. And all his friends. This was not like a music fan. This is a like,
he's a hockey fan.
He's a hockey fan, and he could give a shit about music, but he heard that song when he scored a goal and beat his best buddy or some shit. And anyway,
it was ingrained in his memory.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. That's a fun thing. Yeah.
I mean, I've been ripping NHL 21 now for like months and months, and all of this like downtime I've had, like I've just like played into like my 15th season, and it's just like absurd. But when I tell you that like the Idol song on that soundtrack and the 1975 song on that soundtrack, I've heard hundreds of times, like, yeah. And they're in my brain, like, wake up, wake up, wake up, it's Sunday morning, something, it's something, the 1975 song, and yeah. Like it's just there and it's never leaving because of how many times I've heard it. And that's probably, you know, if you could just imagine the serendipity of like someone like walking into like the club that you were playing just to like get a drink and being like, wait a second, I remember that song from 14 years ago, ripping it up as like Vincent LeCavalier or something, or well, whoever, hey, you might so, be in NHL 07.
So to your point, like this is a kind of funny real thing that happened. So in order to gear up for this show, we've been practicing for months and months, and two practices a week, and we're going pretty hard. And it was really hard initially to find a practice space in Seattle because as much as Seattle's known for music, the tech sector took over the whole town and you can't find a shitty room to rent and practice music. However, there's a Superior Auto Service in Ballard, shout out, giving them a plug. They have a room upstairs and they let us practice in that room. well, one night we're practicing and this kid like is changing the oil on a car downstairs, and he freaks out because he's hearing like one of his favorite bands he grew up listening to playing his songs like right upstairs. So imagine that, dude, you're changing oil on a car at work and you hear like, oh, is that Fable? Like he literally heard the music, and then then he takes pictures. And so like, I don't know, but right before I played a show, we had a couple pictures from our practice space. And that was him that took those pictures.
Nice.
And he's the only person who had seen us play music in 15 years. He was the first one. In fact, we got nervous when he came in the room because we're like, no one's heard us play in so long. You're the only one. And then I literally blew out my voice that night because we ended up playing like way too many songs, even though we just practiced for 2 hours. And I literally lost my voice a week before the show because we were so geeked out to play music for somebody.
Yeah.
And anyways, it was just, yeah.
He probably was like, wait, is like a cover band ripping Gatsby? Like, is there a Gatsby cover band? What's going on?
Yeah.
This is America's Gatsby dream.
Yeah.
But no, like I wouldn't be surprised if like the 7-year-old that played, you know, that ripped, you know, NHL 07 was like had the phone about his head saying, play theater.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's... we used to just have to yell at you like orphans, yeah. Play it. Man, kids got it easy these days.
We played an 18 song set, or I think it was 20 songs. We played like a lot. That's a long ass. That's a lot of songs. I mean, and so it was funny because most things people requested, I was like, yeah, we're playing that one, or yeah, we're playing that one. Except one person requested a random song. I was like, sorry, no, we're not. Man, we're not
that's a deep cut. Yeah.
Was We're Not Orphans in the set list?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Can't not, right?
Yeah, but yeah. There were times that you did not play it, and Tom and I were very mad at you guys.
That's the jam then? That's your guys' jam?
That's the jam.
Yeah, cool. That's really cool. Oh,
there's a lot of jams. You got jams.
Well, I appreciate it. I felt bad for the kid. My neighbor came, and so I was asking her about her experience. How was your experience down at our show? I didn't see her down there, but I love hearing people's, like, what their whole time was at the show that I didn't see. And it's like, oh, I met these guys from Texas, and their best friend, he bought a ticket. He flew his brother out. He had a camera equipment ready to go, and this guy's a drunk heap on the ground and it's like missed the entire thing. They took his camera, took pictures for him, and like they bought him merch and shit, like good friends, but he was just in a heap in like the side of the room.
Party too hard.
Yeah. Dude,
that's what happens. Like I can remember back to being in my early 20s and like doing shit like that. Like getting so pumped to go see a band and thinking like, I'm going to just drink my face off because I'm so pumped. And then like, by the time you get to the band you want to see, you're like barely like sitting up against a wall, like
for real,
not remembering any of it. Like yeah, that's just,
that dude, was Miami. The first time we saw had our that. Band.
Yeah. That's what I did. I didn't even make it to you guys.
But that happened to our buddy Jervich. Remember
it
was kind of like a semi reunion when you guys took a couple of years off and then played that Albany show, like randomly in Albany.
Yeah.
Our buddy Jervich, who was also in like our Gatsby crew that always went to see you guys. He got so pumped and like drank all day to see you guys. And then we lost him during the show. And then we go out at the end of the night. We're like, yo, we lost our friend. Like we're in Albany, New York. We're not even like near home. And we go out to the car, and he's literally sleeping on the hood of our car. Like, I don't think he saw you guys.
He's missing a shoe. He had, like, his shirt was, like, ripped open. Like, it was, like, Mad Max, like, beyond Thunderdome. Like,
well, shit, man. That was me when the Seahawks won our first and only Super Bowl. Because, like, we don't win shit here, dude. Like the Mariners set the record for longest drought without a playoff appearance. Like we like no Sonics. Like Seahawks going to the Super Bowl is a big deal, and we brought the Jello shots. And so on the way, I'm going, oh, a couple of these are good, and then everyone passed them around every time we score, and we blew Denver out that Super Bowl. I don't know if you remember, but that meant lots and lots of shots. Like I don't remember the second half, dude. And I'm like the only Super Bowl ever. Like barely,
It happens to the best of us.
Yes, sir.
That was the Tim Tebow Super Bowl, right? When he was playing for the Broncos?
Well, it was Peyton Manning.
Oh, it was Peyton. Okay.
Yeah. It was like zombie Peyton, though. Like the only reason they were good was because their defense and like Von Miller and shit. Dude.
Yeah, Von Miller ran that thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. I, you know, Seattle just, you know, the heartbreak of, you know, trying to pass the ball and not giving it to Marshawn Lynch.
Come on. We're not even talking about that Super Bowl. No one's talking about that after. Super Bowl. Then that's the curse, bro. You cannot talk about winning the Super Bowl without somebody being like, hey, well, what about give it to Marshawn? You're just like,
give it a beast mode.
How about we had one nice thing? Can we just have the one that we won without thinking about the worst sports moment of all time? Ask me. Yeah.
I don't know. I think the worst sports moment was Tom Brady missing the catch in the Eagles Super Bowl.
Yeah. You know, that's a lot more palatable when you have a zillion rings.
Yes.
Yeah. That's true. All right. Well, my apologies. I didn't mean to rip open such a dark, deep, dark wound. But before I let you go, you know, because I'm back on the show and because I have these wacky ideas, I always like to do some wacky shit. So, you know, it's not every day that we get to talk to, a band that was, running in the same circles as a lot of other influential bands in the, early to mid 2000s. So I'm going to play a little roulette with you. I'm going to crunch it down. I'm going to name five bands that, kind of ran the same circles. And I just would love to hear, any stories, any memories you have about them, if you ever toured with them, any cool stuff, or if I hit one that you don't recognize, just be like, oh shit, I didn't know about them. But I'll try to keep it pretty broad. So first one we're going to do, I'm going to start with This Day and Age.
I only know them as a thing I've seen on a t-shirt a bunch of times.
Wow. I would have thought that you would have crossed paths with them, but okay.
That doesn't mean that I didn't.
You just don't have any necessarily remarkable things.
I don't know about them.
All right. That's fair.
What label were they on?
They were on 111.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was so random, Tom. I'm not even sure why you picked that band.
I figured that would have been a home run. All right, number two, Finch.
Oh, Finch. Love those guys. Never toured with them or even really knew them when I was in Gatsby's, but became friends with R2K after Gatsby's stopped because he wanted to start a project with me, and we were going to call it Gazillionaire. That was the working title.
Okay.
And we actually have demos that we recorded. And
awesome.
But I went down to LA to work on music. And I said, all right, dude, I'll be there tomorrow. Like we booked. And then he said, I'm flying out of town tomorrow. And I said, well, that's too bad. I'm coming to see you in Los Angeles. And so he gave me his keys and his car in downtown Los Angeles. And I had them for a week, which was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Another time I went down there to work on music with him, and we thought we'd try the fun thing of robo-tripping. Have you heard of robo-tripping? You take too much Robitussin, you
lose. Oh, yeah, Tussin Wolf.
Yeah, so we were going to attempt that, but no Robitussin was to be found. Instead, we each drank two family sizes of NyQuil.
Yeah, and NyQuil. Yeah,
and his girlfriend walks in and looks at us and just goes, you guys are fucking idiots. You're just going to feel like shit and fall asleep, which is exactly what happened. So that's my Finch story, I guess.
that's a sick story. I love that.
And could have been your label mates, right? Weren't they on Drive Through?
Yeah, but we weren't.
But like, isn't that kind of the whole thing? Like they were the label that was like, why don't you guys write fucking choruses?
Yeah. In fact, they said, when we played for Drive Through, they said we had a band like you before who didn't like choruses, and they were the starting line. Once they started writing the choruses, they took off, and then we're like, whatever.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Thanks for that vote of confidence. All right, band number three, the Deer Hunter.
Oh, now isn't that the dude who was in Receiving Into Sirens, Casey?
Sure was, yep.
Yeah, so we toured with them, and they were super cool. And then one night, somewhere in the East, we stayed at this person's house who had a massive indoor swimming pool. And then adjacent to the swimming pool, they had, like, a band room set up. And it was like, okay, let's get the most talented dudes from both bands and put them together. So we got the most talented drummer, who is Rudy, our drummer. And then we got Casey to go crazy with Rudy. And I'm telling you guys, that's the best jam session I've ever seen in my fucking life. Casey Crescendo going nuts with the best drummer and then whoever holding it down on bass. And it was like, no one's trying to sing. We're just like, oh, like, yeah. A bunch of dudes who are not supposed to be impressioned, like, we're not supposed to be impressed. We're all professional musicians, and all of us were just like in awe. So that was pretty cool.
That sounds love like that. A sick house too. Shit.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, I'd love to have a house like that.
Yeah.
Just like sick. Band room. Just like, hey,
next to an indoor pool.
Go hang out in our indoor pool. All right. Second to last band. We're going to go with As Tall as Lions.
Oh my God. As Tall as Lions, Long Island. Y'all, Long Island got your own kind of bravado. This cocky little, yeah. Is it machismo? Is it douche? There's somewhere in the middle. I mean, is it endearing? Is it not? Like, it's kind of tough to say. Who are we talking about?
As Tall as Lions. The flex.
I remember we had a house party at Dan's, and so okay, so Dan, the singer, is like, of course, okay, this is like the most Long Island fucking shit. Okay, so I'm gonna make fresh sauerkraut in the kitchen, and so he's like making fresh sauerkraut. The whole house just reeks, and I'm talking to some cute girl, and she's like, I need to get some cigarettes from my car. And I'm like, okay, fuck. Like, so can I walk you out there? You know, I'm trying to be a gentleman and stuff. And she walks out and it's like a brand new Range Rover. And I'm like, what are you? What is this? She's like, oh, my dad invented Under Armour. I was like, okay. we will protect this house. Is he that guy? She's like, yeah, he came up with that. And I'm like, I'm in Long fucking Island right now. Like, yeah. So
Dan, the sauerkraut king of Long Island.
And you know what he went on to do.
Yeah, yeah. He's like Olivia Rodrigo Grammy guy.
Yeah, dude.
Yep.
Couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
It's true. And the rest of that band.
I wonder if he needs sauerkraut for.
one of the tightest rhythm sections.
Oh, dude, Cliff is a G.
You know, I think I.
We're losing Tom, but yes, Cliff is a G.
Seen in the band.
He's back.
Cliff is such. Cliff is also like the nicest dude ever. I love.
Oh that. Yeah,
yeah.
All right.
Hell yeah!
I want to hear the last one, Tom.
Last one. We're gonna go with. I got three left on the screen. I'm gonna pick one of them.
Rapid fire.
Let's go with Cartel.
Oh my God. Cartel. Cartel. Okay, here we go. So we toured with them and like what was the singer's name? Will, I think.
Will, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, okay. So Will is a nice guy, talented artist, and fantastic singer. But he has a habit of before he goes on stage. I mean, us singers, we warm up, but you usually warm up in your green room or in your dressing room. Not Will. He walks throughout the backstage, going in and out of every band's green room, going across the night and doing all these vocal warm-ups when we're just like, bro, like trying to have a conversation. Here comes Will just in and out of every room, just singing his ass off. It's like, cool, dude. Just like, yeah. So anyways, I was thinking about going to the, just wait while Will walk by and, sang, and, go, and then you keep talking. Yeah.
Like that scene from Ace Ventura with the door.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then, like, he wants everybody to know that he was a professional golfer too. So that's another Cartel thing.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I didn't know that he's a professional golfer.
Or collegiate golf. He could have been good. He was good somewhere in that world, but
he looks like he would be good at golf.
Oh, right,
he does. For sure.
Or tennis.
Yeah.
Or hockey.
Yeah. Maybe.
What wouldn't he be good at? Right.
Singing. Golf.
No, he looks like a first round hockey draft pick. That's what he looks like.
You're just going based on Adam Banks from the Mighty Ducks because he looks like Adam Banks.
No, I'm thinking about first round hockey draft pick by Matt Christopher. All right,
like our guy Devers.
Devers.
Devers. Well, I'm showing my hockey ass, by the way. That's how much I don't care, but I like that guy.
No, it's good to like him.
Let's let Tom go through the last three for just for lightning round.
Yes. Okay, so lightning round. Fun. Okay, they're all in November.
Ace, dude, is that bad? Ace Enders,
yeah.
That's all I know. Boom, next. All right,
good. Perfect. Hollow Out Circuit.
Oh, I like that one record. The album cover was very emo. Like a girl writing or like a...
Oh, Sorry About Tomorrow. Yeah, it's a great record. Yeah. Good one.
Love it.
Last, you can't just drop a guitar, man. You can't do that.
I dropped a water bottle and it tapped my guitar.
And the last one, and we already sort of mentioned them during the podcast, but Portugal the Man.
John, Zach, Kyle. I mean, we kind of started with them and yeah, dude, those are the homies.
Did you technically start with Portugal the Man or did you like have runnings with Anatomy of a Ghost?
Oh no, Anatomy of a Ghost for sure.
Yeah.
A lot of Portugal for years.
Yeah, a lot of people don't remember, man, that they were like this weird post-hardcore band called Anatomy of a Ghost, and they were all from Alaska. And
yeah,
now look at them. Now they're that song that's like, And that song has been played everywhere all the time. Yeah. But good for them, man. You know, hard work pays off. Well, that was awesome. Maybe I'll do that segment every time we talk to somebody, and I'll just pick like 10 new bands and just be like, hey, do you remember fucking Thursday or something? And then they'll either tell me if they do or not. So, but Nick, man, thanks for doing this. We are really, really stoked to have you on. We thank you so much for talking some old stuff and some new stuff. And we're super glad that you're into this shit now, because hockey is so much fun, and we're glad you're along for the ride. So we'll definitely be keeping you in our minds, and hopefully we'll see some cool shit in the future. 100%. I hope to see you guys playing out again. So awesome. So Tom, Mikey, Justin, thanks again, Nick. Nick from Gatsby's American Dream.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
We appreciate you.
Have a good night, brother.
Peace.